If you'd like to receive this podcast early and without ads, consider becoming a member of the DSR Network. Listeners to this show can receive 25% off the membership price. In addition to an ad-free listening experience and early access, members receive bonus content for virtually all of our shows via our private member feed, enhanced show notes for selected podcasts, and an invitation to join the DSR Slack community. Visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy and enter code NOJOKE to receive 25% off. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy and code NOJOKE. This offer is limited and will expire on Saturday, April 6th, so act now. And thank you very much for your support.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm David Rothkopf, joined as ever by Chris Kotwer and Riley Fessler. How you doing, Chris?
Great, thanks.
Excellent. Riley?
Pretty good.
What's the first story you got for us today, Chris?
Israel's military acknowledged as a grave mistake the airstrike that killed seven World Central Kitchen aid workers in Gaza, leading to the suspension of the charity's operations and the associated U.S. charity ANERA. This halt affects food distribution significantly, as these organizations were delivering 2 million meals weekly in a region where half the population faces catastrophic hunger. The incident also disrupted a maritime aid corridor from Cyprus intended to alleviate famine in Gaza. I also just wanted to point to the podcast that we did last week where our guest was Nate Mook, and while he was talking about his time in Ukraine, it highlights the importance and the dangers that these aid workers are facing and the kinds of things that they're doing. I described them as doing God's work. If you haven't listened to that episode, I highly encourage you to do it. It was a really great show. Nate Mook is top notch, and what he's doing is phenomenal.
Yeah, no question about that. In my article yesterday, in which I talked about this issue, I also talked to Nate, and I quoted him about a couple of the aid workers who died, because he knew the aid workers who died. Jose Andres, who was the founder of World Central Kitchen, has also spoken of them. He wrote an article in the New York Times yesterday, which is well worth reading. And our discussion about the depths of suffering that this has brought, and the challenges that it has presented in the region, on yesterday's podcast, where we were joined not only by Rosa Brooks and Ed Luce, but also Noga Tarnopolsky, who's a journalist based in Israel, also went into great depth on this. I encourage you to read all of these things. It is a sad commentary that the White House saw to leak a story saying the president was outraged by this, but that U.S. policy towards Israel would not change, this during a time where we have sent them weapons, very significant systems, even this week. Because clearly it is a time for a change in these policies. Clearly this issue illustrates that although the death of these seven people, as lamentable as it is no less or more of a source of grief than the other 33,000 civilians who've been killed in the course of this war. Maybe this will be a turning point. As of right now, it does not seem like that's the case.
Riley. Well, in the wake of the horrific terrorist attack at the Crocus City Hall in Moscow, which resulted in the deaths of 114 people, Russian officials are still pointing fingers at Ukraine and the West, implicating them in the attack. So despite receiving specific warnings from U.S. intelligence about a potential Islamic State threat to specifically the Crocus City Hall, Russian authorities have chosen to ignore those, chose to ignore those, and instead are suggesting that U.S. and British intelligence services assisted Ukraine in orchestrating the attack. Amidst these accusations, Russian security officials have also accused Western intelligence of leveraging terrorist organizations against their adversaries, framing the attack as part of the broader conflict with NATO. And it seems like this is a clear way to kind of try and gin up support for this war effort that is stalling in Ukraine. And state services did say that they have seen a rise in enlistments since the attack. So it seems like this narrative might be working if those numbers are to be believed.
Well, it's a load of shit, and it's known, you know, it's clear that it's a load of shit, and it was a predictable load of shit. The United States, you know, apparently warned the Russians not only that an attack was imminent, but that this particular venue was likely to be the target of the attack. One of the reasons the Russians are taking this stance is to distract attention from that. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, and it cannot be discounted, that perhaps Russia looked the other way, as it has done in the past, because it thought that an attack like this might motivate sentiment among the Russian people in a way that would, you know, support the war in Ukraine and provide support for Putin. They are that cynical. Experts who understand them have acknowledged that that's a possibility. Whatever the case, you know, bluster about Russia now being at war with NATO is absurd. There has been a conflict between Russia and NATO for some time now, and it is clear that NATO is on the side of Ukraine, fighting against Russia and providing support against Russia. And it is also clear that Russia is not going to, at any point that conflict is ongoing, escalate it. Because, you know, if it can't beat the Ukrainian army, it's not going to do that well against the 32 armies of NATO. And it knows it. So big talk, political goals, no truth whatsoever. Chris?
But is it a load of shit?
It is, I believe, the technical foreign policy term, you can correct me on this, is a load of shit.
I remember we had a president once who said his foreign policy was don't do stupid shit. I remember an editor of foreign policy writing about that once.
Yeah,
who that guy was.
Yeah, I wrote about it. It was a stupid policy. You know, it's not a policy not to do stupid shit. It's a watchword of any policy not to do stupid shit. But Obama used it as an excuse in certain circumstances not to do what he ought to have done. And even Hillary Clinton said, you know, not to do stupid shit is not a policy.
On to my second story. NATO foreign ministers commemorated the 75th anniversary of the alliance with a celebration in Brussels amid discussions on enhancing military aid to Ukraine as it continues to confront Russian aggression, with NATO's expansion to 32 members reflecting a revived focus due to the Ukraine conflict. Discussions included plans for a more significant NATO role in security assistance and a proposed 100 billion euros to fund support for Ukraine's military. Concerns were expressed about the future of NATO and the delay in the United States' aid to Ukraine, particularly in light of potential political changes in the United States. And we all know what those changes potentially could be. Hopefully, the United States will see a 76th year of NATO in November and beyond.
Yeah, well, you know, it's not... I mean, I hear the nervous laugh in your voice there. It is something to be nervous about. NATO clearly is trying to make plans to Trump-proof the alliance. Trump has said he wants out of NATO. Trump tried to take steps to weaken NATO while he was president the last time. Trump and the GOP seem content to advance, or seem inclined to advance, Putin's agenda in this regard. Let's hope there is a 76th anniversary celebration for NATO. It's not a guaranteed thing. Riley.
So an interesting survey was released from Southeast Asia, which suggests that a majority of respondents would choose China over the United States in a hypothetical scenario. The State of Southeast Asia 2024 survey, which is conducted by an institute in Singapore, found that 50.5% of respondents leaned towards China, which is a pretty big increase from the previous year's 38.9%. It's the first time that China has been preferred over the U.S. But interestingly, it also showed that 59.9% of respondents recognized China as the leading economic power, but that 67.5% expressed concern over its economic dominance, with over half fearing potential economic and military coercion. So it certainly shows that sentiments, at least according to this poll and survey, are pretty mixed. And one expert that was interviewed for this article suggested that a lot of this actually was more of the fact that respondents were wary of the U.S. involvement with Israel's conflict in Gaza as a reason for why the preference to China swung. So if that's true, that kind of shows that, you know, not only is that conflict affecting opinions in the U.S., but also clearly in Asia as well.
No doubt that it is. No doubt that the current U.S. stance with regard to the war in Gaza is not helping it around the world. But the poll also indicates that nobody wants to be dominated by any power internationally, whether it's China or the United States, particularly the smaller countries in Asia. That means that to some extent, you know, rivalry between the United States and China will be viewed by the world as not a bad thing if it holds each in some degree of check, is if it sends the message to both big powers that there are choices for other countries to make. You know, frankly, you know, I have to say, as much as I value and celebrate U.S. aspirations, you know, for a better world, and contrast them with, you know, some of the aspirations of the Chinese leadership, it's probably not a bad thing to have some kind of balance of power in the world. It's probably not a bad thing for the nations of the world, and to induce a degree of sort of caution and humility in leaders in both countries. Chris?
I get that it's early, but I'd like to raise my water bottle to pragmatic judges. Judge Juan Merchan dismissed Donald Trump's request to delay his hush money trial in New York until the Supreme Court resolves his presidential immunity claims in another case. The judge deemed the motion untimely, questioning the sincerity of Trump's defense, who argued that some evidence from his presidency should be excluded due to immunity. The trial centered on payments made to silence negative stories during Trump's 2016 campaign, and it's set to begin shortly after the Supreme Court hears arguments on Trump's immunity in a separate case related to his actions surrounding the January 6th Capitol riot. Take that, Donald Trump. No delay for you. Delay didn't work in this particular case.
Well, it's worked for a while. Let's be honest. I think if there was news for Donald Trump that makes him apprehensive yesterday about his court cases, it's the news concerning Jack Smith's response to Judge Eileen Cannon's request for both sides in the trial to evaluate proposals she made for jury instructions, the proposals which included an acceptance of an absurd argument on the part of Trump that the Presidential Records Act essentially enabled him to take anything he wanted from the White House and make it his own. And Jack Smith responded by saying, this is ridiculous, and you need to rule on it now, because if we wait till the trial and you rule on it after a jury has been seated, it's not appealable. Double jeopardy will pertain. Trump will walk away. And essentially what Smith was saying was, if you don't rule on this now, we're going to go to a higher court and we're going to get a writ of mandamus. We're going to go to a higher court, and we will not only seek to have the your position on this overturned or clarified, we may well seek to have you removed as the judge on this case. Eileen Cannon has been trying to walk a line of essentially being a clearly pro-Trump judge, but not to take any decisions that could be reversed. Instead, just trying to play into delay, delay, delay. It seems that Jack Smith has had enough. It seems she has created in this particular request an opening to have her certainly overturned, perhaps removed. If that happens and that trial gets back on track, it is by far the strongest case against Trump. You know, he took the documents, he obstructed justice, the documents were very serious, the crimes are very serious. It is the kind of thing that would make people not want to vote for him if he were found guilty. And so, once again, we must keep an eye on that case, even as these other cases unfold. That's what we do here. We keep an eye on things, and we will continue to do that tomorrow, next week, and on and on and on. And we will discuss these things in our podcasts, including some we do today. And so we encourage you to listen to those. And if you want more information on what we're doing here, go to the dsrnetwork.com. And if you haven't been there recently, you'll find the site looks a little different. That's a good thing. I think it's upgraded. We've got more upgrades in store for you, including a couple of new pods, which will be introduced over the course of the next month. One on climate, one on artificial intelligence. Both of which I think will be cool and timely and interesting, and we will encourage you to listen to them. Until then, thanks. Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Riley. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.